cliffcentral.com. That's right, and Borge will be joining us this morning, just before 8 o'clock as well. We got Simpiwe here. We got Ben. It seems like a crazy start to the morning for Ben. Car keys and house keys and God knows what else. Cats, you know, formerly ex girlfriends, now life partners. There's a lot of things going on in the world on this Friday morning. It's a lot happening. And Congo Chris has some comments here, Ben, which maybe you want to take seriously. He says, "I'm concerned about your lack of focus this morning, Ben. New things are exciting, but you need to keep a level head. Love is as addictive as heroin, twice as intoxicating." Very disappointed in you.
I absolutely agree. You're totally right. Just one of those mornings, really. I think everything else is in check, Congo Chris. You do realize I'm quite a disciplined person. I don't do too many things on bad decisions or bad intel. I think as of right now, 7:07, you'll see that I'm my normal self. Totally fine.
All right. Simpiwe, we've got some feedback for you. During the break, we sometimes play music, and it's this library music that we play, which is, it's horrible mostly. I mean, I don't know where you guys find it, but someone thought that maybe you were singing in the music again this morning, because there's this woman in the song that, and someone thought that was you.
That ain't me, okay? I'd be sounding like Adele mixed with Alicia Keys when I sing. Like, don't insult me like that, okay, honey? I can harmonize, you know? I can hit the high notes and the low notes, you know? Don't try me.
All right. So you actually did have an agenda this morning, Ben. There were some things you wanted to talk about, and maybe we got to get to some of those. There's some reality TV show that you found that you actually care about, which is surprising to me, because I've yet to find a reality
Ben
TV show.
Ben is dropping bombshell after bombshell after bombshell. Like,
you get
a reality show.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I remember like a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned the Physical 100. It's that Korean show where they take 100 different bodies and they try to find out which is the perfect body when it comes to being physically superior.
And oh, wow.
We didn't really go through it that much, but then I finished it last night and it was making me think how, you know, reality TV is mostly shit and it's negative and it's very emotional and just very dramatic. But this show had so much excellence that was strapped to it. And it was so interesting how I think reality TV, if used like this, can actually be really good. So it starts off with 100 people if you haven't seen it. There's not too many spoilers here. Obviously, somebody wins. And they have women. And naturally, this is the only spoiler, the women don't win. Because as much as we want to be very inclusive, and this is no slight towards the women folk, but men are stronger, more capable, and physically superior. That's not even a controversial thing to say. And the show is like, we want to find who the best person is, no matter the race, gender, blah, blah, blah.
What are the criteria? Is it strength?
Well, it's everything. So you've got like really big power lifters all the way through to gymnasts, you know, Winter Olympians, cyclists, MMA fighters. It's really interesting because it's such a cross section. And it's 100 incredibly well-built Korean people. I think like 20 of them are women to start, but the women kind of get sorted out.
I know this sounds terribly stereotypical, but I have to say I'm one of those people who, when I think of physical strength and vitality, I don't think of South Koreans.
Neither do I, but you should see this show, Gareth. These people are absolute specimens. We've got tall, short, bulky, athletic. Then you've got like the sort of more Instagram ripped, which obviously comes with steroids. It is so interesting how the show itself is quite labored, and when you listen to the English translations, it's really lame because they just repeat each other, and they always get, like, they go, "Oh, that's so crazy. Wow, this is crazy. Look at that. That is crazy." So you've got to get past that a little bit, but it's just so good. And I was thinking, like, what else could be done in reality TV like this? You know, what if you set 10 people the task of building a house? Yeah. And that's how they kind of go through that. I know they've got those makeover shows, but what if there was like, you have to now try and make X amount of money in a month, and these are your tools? Like The Amazing Race kind of touched on this kind of stuff, but this whole trying to always show that excellence is something to worry about. But, like, I don't want to see another Housewives of some bullshit show. Yeah. That's just toxic. It's just toxic. Whereas this show is like, the whole human potential thing. It unlocks that. It shows you what's possible. No one's making excuses.
I'm quite interested in like who the ultimate specimen would be, because I've often said on the show that the winner of the Olympics isn't actually a country. It's the victor ludorum. You know, that's the person who gets all the medals, because they've won the decathlon, which is the 10 event, the toughest thing of all at the Olympics. And, you know, that from ancient times, the victor ludorum is like the world's greatest athlete. That was
Bruce Jenner in the 70s, wasn't it?
I think so. But I mean, you have to be able to do hurdles and high jump and pole vault and running and running short distance and running long distance and long jump. And you kind of have to do all of those and you have to win like at the majority of them. And then you can be called the victor ludorum. So I'm actually kind of interested in who would win. Is it a power lifter? Is it a swimmer? Is it a triathlete? Is it a cyclist? So have you come to the end of the show yet, or are you still in the middle of it?
No, I watched it last night. The big hour and 20-minute grand finale tells you who wins. But there's no point in me telling you this. You've got to actually understand like the different sort of – you get team challenges. You get individual challenges. You got to hang on a bar for as long as you can. Other things are completely strength-based. So it's just interesting how everyone's got a strength and weakness, but if you are averagely that much stronger and capable, you get through towards the end. So there was a female cheerleader. She got put in there for diversity, but she was never going to win anything or even compete in anything.
So who do you find yourself surprised made it as far as they did? I mean, was there a certain category of athlete that you didn't expect to do well that did well?
So kind of yes and no. The person that got the furthest, when you look at physiques, you wouldn't have given him a chance, was a guy that does ice climbing and mountain rescue. But then it goes back to the fact that he's able to climb, and that is like an absolute alpha strength. Now, if you got the ability to do pull-ups in life, you can do pretty much anything, which I've always believed in. So this dude, he looks quite skinny and gangly, but he got really, really far because he could climb and use upper body strength like no one else.
So being able to climb is a strange skill that most people probably don't have. I mean,
A lot of people can't even do this. A lot of people can't even raise their arms above shoulder height like this, let alone support their weight.
Jeez. Okay, so that's a real sign of strength. And is it better to be lean or to be very muscular?
So it's always that sort of balance of power to weight ratio. If you think of cars, think of like a really good car. You saw my car. There's not a lot of power in that, but it's very light. So therefore, it's very capable. So your ultimate athlete is someone who ideally probably not over 100 kilograms unless you are incredibly freakish gorilla strong, because then you've got a massive frame, which is just a waste of effort. So people want to get big for all the wrong reasons. If you want to be super strong and capable in life, always think of your power to weight ratio.
I think I might actually be interested in this show. I mean, I don't think I'll watch the whole thing.
I'll give it a watch. Yeah.
It does sound interesting. The thing for me is like, I love seeing people who are absolutely brilliant at what they do, doing their thing, even if I couldn't care about what it is they're doing. Like, for example, I've sometimes found myself watching, I'm not a big sports viewer. You know this. I don't have to bullshit anybody, but I've sometimes found myself watching like someone who's really good at something doing it, like the Olympics, for example, because you see like a pole vaulter and you think, that is an incredibly specialized ability. It's something that you don't encounter in daily life. I'm sure there was a time when people had to vault over rivers or whatever. Now it's not something people do anymore. But when you see it done and you see how high these guys can go, you think, holy shit, that's actually an incredible thing. So I think I could watch this show. I think I could watch this.
And another thing is that every 4 years, people get excited about the Olympics, probably because every 4 years and the whole absence makes the heart grow fonder. But it would be great to see more of these challenges of what the physical body is capable of.
Just by the way, before you came on, Simpiwe was horrified by the fact that there are vape vending machines. She thinks this is a major problem. Do you have any feelings about vapes?
It's better than meth, better than heroin. Probably better than chocolates if you're going to be going to a vending machine for chocolate every day.
That's all we've got. Oh my
God. It's probably better than having a 500 mils Fanta orange.
All right. Okay, well, Ben, you've entertained us this morning. You've even come up with a good reality TV show for us to watch. Mm-hmm. That room looks pretty cool. Are you using that for recordings?
Yeah, I'm trying to make educational content for athletes at the moment. I did my first sort of thing this week, which I was quite chuffed with. But the room itself is too small, unfortunately. I need like an extra meter.
Yeah, but you also, you want a small room for recording, sound-wise.
Yeah, for sure, sound-wise. But like just for visuals, you need a little bit of depth, just for a bit of quality of visual. But it's getting there, like. You know, it's been a very good 2 weeks as well with work. Osari is just like creating new things and putting the business in a different place. So, yeah, it's nice. But I'm very keen to see your new space, and hopefully that'll be very soon.
We will do that. I promise you. We're going to do it soon. I did two shows from there this week, and then we had pretty much every day and night we had stuff on. So it wasn't a good week to do it this Friday, but we'll do it next week. Cool, Ben.
Amazing. Bye, guys.
See you later.
Bye, Ben.
Bye. All right. What a morning for him. Holy shit. Okay, let's get to Mum Z. Let me tell you who this is. He was born in Soweto, raised in Sandton. He's the original self-proclaimed coconut of the South African comedy world, so he doesn't mind that label. Normally, people would run a mile, right, Simpiwe? If someone calls you a coconut, no one's looking to be called that.
I'd be like, excuse me, who you think you're talking to? Okay. Like, and then, like,
this guy, he does not give a shit. You could call him that. He's going to laugh right in your face. He was involved in ZAR News, which we loved. Do you remember Puppet Nation? ZAR News?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I do.
This show earned him 2 international Emmy nominations and 4 SAFTA awards. So he's a very talented man. He was the first comedian in South Africa to make the finals of, or the semifinals rather, of SA's Got Talent. Oh, sorry, I got a bit of gas there. After being stuck in Russia for 2 years during COVID. Russia? See, there's lots to unpack here.
He's lived a life and a half.
I know. He's become the 2020 champion of English comedy in Moscow, which, I mean, is not hard. There are only about like 3 comics in Moscow. The Russians are not very funny, so you don't have any competition from the local people. But let's get straight to it. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. Mumsy, how are you, bro?
Hey,
how
are you doing? Good, and you?
Yeah, very good, man. So Simpiwe was horrified when I said that you sometimes refer to yourself as the self-proclaimed coconut of SA comedy. I mean, that is a controversial thing to start with. Let's just figure that out before we go anywhere else.
So I mean, you know, there's a lot of names that I was called when I was younger. And it's difficult because so, you know, when you're born in Soweto and you're raised in Sandton, especially because I was born in 1985, sure. You're basically living a duality every day. You know what I mean?
Like, yes.
We had a combi that used to take all the kids from Soweto into Morningside to go to school. And we get there at like, what, 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock in the morning. But we'd have to wake up at like 4 or 5 o'clock. And then we'd be the last to leave because you got to wait for everyone to finish their, you know, extramurals or whatever. Now, the problem is that at both ends of your life, people don't think that you quite fit in. You know what I mean? Like, when you're in Soweto, everyone's like, oh yeah, you think you're special now. Oh, cheers point. Oh, coconut. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then you go to the other side, and it's almost as if, like, you don't really, you're not.
No, it's, you broke really, the other side.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
You are broke. You know, you cannot afford.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, we're wearing hand-me-downs and all sorts of stuff. I think one of the most important things that I realized is that I kept shying away from the word, and I kept trying to defend myself, which made me seem more, it actually made me more, what's the word? You know, when you get more defensive about something, you actually don't have control over the situation. So you actually relinquish control to other people.
I mean, it's meant as a pejorative, and I hate the term. I always think, you know, it's kind of like when someone accuses you of pretending, and you're like, I'm not, this is me. You don't have to like me, but don't accuse me of bullshitting and trying to fit in with a certain group of people. I mean, there are people who do that, sure, but no one says, you're a coconut and means it in a friendly, nice, fun way. They probably mean it to make you feel horrible. And anyone who's doing that, their intention's shit. So you're probably not going to enjoy the moniker that they're giving you. Look, I mean, I think it's great that you owned it. It's kind of like the N-word in America. You know, the minute that black people took the N-word and owned it and made it theirs, it became unacceptable for white people to use it, especially racists. And I think that's a good thing. So if you can do this with coconut, power to you, bro. I mean, I think it's, you know, it's also one of those things. People have got to stop doing this. Like, all white people must behave this way. All black people must speak this way. I mean, what nonsense is this? We're in 2023. There's got to be room for everybody. If that isn't what South Africa is, then I don't know what the hell we've been fighting for.
No, 100%. I mean, for me, I think, you know, it kind of started, it really, the whole concept of taking ownership of the term coconut actually started at school. The school that I went to was Red Hill. And I don't know if you know Coconut Kells, who also went to Red Hill. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, so it's a thing, like, from you guys. You guys just own the term. You're like, you know what?
I mean, you might remember we've had the headmaster of Red Hill on, and that is a very, very smart, very forward-thinking school. There's a lot of kind of, I would say, futuristic type thinking that they put into the curriculum, the way that people feel, the way that people are treated there. It's not like a lot of schools. I mean, it sounds to me like a really, really good place to have gone to school and to grow up.
Yeah. I mean, if you think, I mean, it, with regards to Red Hill, I mean, I started at Red Hill in 1988. So you can imagine, this is like, you know, apartheid hadn't even ended yet. And here you've got a school that is just literally shipping in, well, not shipping in, that's probably the wrong term to be using to people who might have bad history with ships. But actually, it wasn't us, it was people. Wait, I'm going to stop talking.
You're in school, you're enrolled, yes. Use your words.
So, you know, when you're at a school that is forward thinking enough to actually give private education to black kids at way before the government even realizes, you know, you definitely know that you're onto something good. And I mean, both my teachers were parents, so that's all they really cared about was getting a good education. Hence why I got a good education. Hence why I speak well. Hence why I took ownership of the term coconut.
Let me just ask you about the speak well thing, because that's also something that irritates me. It comes from both sides, right? So if you have decent elocution in South Africa, first of all, if you're a white person and you speak reasonably well, as I hope I do, people go, oh, where did you go to school? Because they can't assume that maybe you learned that from home. So they immediately assume there's some, like, you definitely went to some very expensive private school, which in my case is not what happened. Also, they look at you and go, maybe you were overseas. Yeah, you sound like you're from London, you know, or something like that. So that comes at you. If you're a black person, you speak English, let's say you have a very good vocabulary, your pronunciation is more like received pronunciation in England than it is South African. Then they say to you, oh, you either grew up with like white people, which is also, you know, deeply kind of, it's just like assuming a lot, or that you went to X and Y school, or that there's something wrong with you speaking like that. It's just bizarre. Like, and then white people say to black people who speak like that, they go, oh, you speak so well, like it's a huge compliment. But actually it's like, well, I also have, you know, I have all the things you have. same faculties you have. Why would you think that that was a compliment? Imagine me going up to someone else and saying that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Look, I mean, there's another side to that, because, you know, I think that if I speak to, okay, so I'll give you an example. Like, when I speak to people over the phone, they actually have no idea that I'm black. And that can work in your favor sometimes. Like, if you know, trying to get a rental agreement or something like that back in the days, things have kind of progressed a bit now.
Yes.
But, I remember there was a time that me and my sister Chaz were driving from Cape Town to Johannesburg. And I think we wanted to stop off. I think it was like Graafrenet or something.
Yeah.
So I phoned ahead and I was like, hi, listen, we just like to book for tonight. We're driving through from Cape Town. Wanted to know if we could stay over. And the lady was very lovely. And she was like, oh yeah, no, we've got a room. Everything is perfect. We're going to see you now. So I was like, cool. Awesome. And then she actually asked my name, and I said, my name is Mamello. So Mumsy is my stage name. Mamello is my real name, right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
So I tell her, my name is Mamello. You can't really confuse that.
No.
So now we get to Krafnet. I'm not 100% which particular Dorpie it was, but we get to the place where we'd made the booking, and we actually realized that my sister actually had enough energy to push through to the next city, and we thought let's go to the next city, but just to be polite, let's actually just, because we're here already, let's stop in and just tell her, look, we're not going to take the room, but thank you very much.
Oh, nice.
So we walk in, and she sees me and my sister, and she's like, oh, sorry, we don't have any rooms. And I was like, no, I've just made a booking. And then she was like, no, that booking was made to an Italian man.
Oh.
Yeah. Ooh, what?
Holy shit.
And I was like, no, wow. It was a weird situation because she legitimately could have thought I was Italian.
Yeah.
Or she could have been completely racist, right? Not completely, but like moderately enough that I can call her that, you know?
The problem is it's such
a gray area now that, you know, it's up to the individual to say, okay, cool. In a situation like that, is this a racist situation or is it like something to be proud of?
Yeah. Well, again, like, I don't like people who assume anything about you if you speak a certain way. I also don't like it when people assume that she could genuinely have just been ignorant. I mean, she might just be like a woman from the middle of the Karoo who doesn't know much about the world. And it's entirely possible. But I suppose this is where, you know, they say assumption is the mother of all fuck ups. So maybe that's where we start. I do love it. I do also think that it is a useful advantage in the world. In fact, you know, Ben was talking just now about this reality show where they try to figure out what body is the best type of body to survive or to exhibit all the best qualities and strength and like shrewdness and, you know, an ability to climb or run or whatever. And I do still think that that being able to articulate yourself well, to be able to speak any language well, but in particular English, because English is so widespread in the world, is a massive advantage. So, I mean, why wouldn't people want their children to have an education where they come out and they sound like they know what they're talking about? You know, a lot of people, that's how a lot of politicians get away with stuff, is because they can speak fast and eloquently and they can make a good point and they can articulate themselves properly. I don't see how that's a bad thing.
No, it isn't. I mean, like, look, I love the fact that I'm well-spoken. And even so, I mean, well-spoken even amongst other people who went to Red Hill. It's not just because of the fact that I'm black and I can speak English. Like, I'm, you know, like I did public speaking. I was head boy. I think that was
all right, no need to boast there. We didn't need to get into like your...
I support that, Gareth. Oh, I was like, look at this one. Public speaking. What else can't you do, sir?
No, you know what? It's an honor for me to be with Gareth. So I just definitely want to take this opportunity so this to let like everybody out there know.
put some respect on my name. You know, you might just hear Mamello, but...
You know what I look forward to is I look forward to the day where we aren't, because obviously our history in South Africa is just so complicated and so fraught with reasons for us to be divided and all that shit. I mean, that's why, you know, what happened in 94 was so miraculous to the rest of the world, because they looked at us and went, oh, these guys are definitely going to go the wrong way. Is I hope we get to a point where it does, when you phone somebody, they're not thinking like, is this a black or a white person? And they can't tell. And then when they see you, they're not horrified and they're not surprised and they're also not patronizing and like, oh my God, it's so wonderful that you're black and you talk like that. I hope we get to that point soon, because I just think it should matter way less than it does to a lot of people anywhere, not just in South Africa.
So I think what's interesting about that is that I think one, knowing English very well really boded well for me while I was in Russia, because
hold that thought for a second. Like, first of all, why were you in Russia, and why were you trapped? Why were you trapped there for COVID? Are you like related to Didi Mabuza or something? Because he's our former deputy president. He went over there for like medical treatment, and we didn't know where he was for a couple of months. So what did you find yourself in Moscow for?
So I've never really had any – I've always wanted to go to Russia, but I've never really had, like, the motivation or actually, like, you know, set aside any financial resources to go there. And so my oldest brother is Fana Mokwena. I don't know if you know him from the
EFF. Oh, yeah. Of course. my God, he's your brother?
Yeah, yeah, he's my oldest brother.
This wow. Resume just keeps getting longer and longer, and it's just like, who?
My brother's not part of my resume.
You can name drop him and be like, you know him.
When you said Fana Mukwena, I'm like, oh, Jesus, this is impressive. This is a good family. Wow, holy shit. Like, is your dad also the deputy president? I mean, this is where we're getting to.
No. My aunt is the premier of the Free State, but that's a different conversation altogether.
How's this? What is this family of yours? It's amazing. All right, so your brother, and then how does that lead to Russia?
Yeah, so he'd actually gone to Russia quite a few times, and every time he was in Cape Town and he was visiting me, he was always raving on about like Moscow being amazing, being amazing, being amazing. Now, before I actually went, I kind of like, you know, most people of color, if you go overseas or you think about going to another country, the first thing you kind of search is like, how racist is that country, right? Which is kind of sad, right?
Yeah, sure, but you have to do it.
Yeah, you have to do it, you know? And the problem with the internet is that's the internet. I mean, Google's going to spit out whatever someone posted or however well someone does their SEO. But I always had the back of my head that, okay, cool. Like, okay, if my brother really likes this place, if I get an opportunity, I'll go. I was in, I'd just come back from a holiday in Germany, and I was in Cape Town literally to come back. And while I was back, I met this interesting Russian girl, and we kind of hit it off. We were at a music festival called Wolf Corp. We hit it off, and I think wow. 2 months later, she was supposed to leave to go back to Russia. And she convinced me to kind of like sell my bike, come visit her, and you know, do the whole, you know, just do 3 months in Russia. Because at that time, we didn't need a visa. But yeah. Then when I got there, they closed the borders. I think it was about a month into being in Russia, they closed the borders. And it became a very real situation because now I was like, I think I had, to be honest, I'm very comfortable telling this to people. I probably had a month of serious like depression, not clinical depression, but like hardly anyone speaks English.
Hang on a second. Let me tell you something. I would shit myself if I knew I was locked down in a foreign country where no one speaks the language, as you point out, where it gets unbelievably cold in winter, where you are with, first of all, you're with this girl. Now, whether or not you guys lasted long, lockdown put a huge amount of pressure on every relationship. And now you look at this and you're probably in like some small apartment, right? I mean, Moscow, it's not like people have big suburban houses. And you've already got like communication issues because she's Russian. So you don't know how long the lockdown's going to last. I mean, I would have been nervous as hell if I knew I was trapped there for that. Well, how did you even cope with that? You talk about a month of depression. I'm surprised it didn't put you in a perpetual depression.
Yeah, I don't know how to properly address this, but she's very well known in Russia, so she was quite well off. So we weren't, you know, she was kind of like fitting the bill for a lot of the time.
That's a bit of a sweetener. I like this. This is making it slightly more bearable.
Yeah, but then you kind of feel like, I mean, like when you're a kept man, technically speaking, you are in like a gilded cage. You're almost like in this palatial prison. You know what I mean? You get to, we went to oligarchs' houses and parties. We were on yachts and all this stuff. But there was a level of control that she had, which took away the shininess of all the things that were shiny. Do you know what I mean?
I'm going to guess 4.5 months maximum. And then 7. You were, okay. So I gave you too little credit. But so you needed to get out of there. And then what you... You could leave by then, or were you still trapped in Russia?
So it was, that's actually a good question. So the South African government was trying to sort out repatriation flights, which is very difficult to negotiate with Russia. Because the thing with Russia is that Putin actually, it's crazy, but Putin decrees everything. It's insane how close his relationship is with every citizen in the country because everything is based on his decree.
And they love him. Young people in Russia, this is something people outside of Russia don't understand. He has given them a sense of pride in Russia. Now, I'm no Putin fan. Let me put that out there right up front. But when you've been in Russia and when you've spoken to Russian people, they don't hate him. They don't see him as some kind of evil dictator. They actually look at him as a man who's restored pride in Russia, you know, after the embarrassing years of Yeltsin and the failure of the Soviet Union. They're like, they give him something to believe in. And there are a lot of young people in Russia who are very pro-Putin, right?
100%. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, it just depends on which circles that that you kind of roll with, because the majority of Russians are in favor of Putin, but majority of Russians don't live in Moscow, St. Petersburg, Sochi, the kind of better off, better educated. Okay, I don't want to say better educated. It's kind of like, but it is the truth.
It's urban. It's like in America, most of the cities are Democrat and the most of the countryside is Republican. And even in red states, the big cities are blue. There is a difference between people who live in cities and people who live in the country.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. It was actually interesting having those conversations, because I think for me, one of the best things about actually getting to Russia, and also how it ties into earlier what you were talking about with regards to, wouldn't it be nice if we were in a world where we wouldn't have to think about race?
Yeah.
So historically, if you look at Russia historically, Russia never really actually had black, like any bad history with black people.
No.
They were never really involved in slavery.
They don't know black people at all. I mean, there was a famous black man who was at the court of Peter the Great, who became a nobleman. And he was essentially from where Ghana is today. But that's in the 1700s, right?
Yes, yes, yes. So he was the great grandfather. I love that you know that piece of information, because now the addition is going to be even better. So he was the great, his name is Gannibal, and he was the great grandfather of the modern day father of Russian literature, which is Alexander Pushkin. So when anyone hears the name Alexander Pushkin, Pushkin Vodka, Count Pushkin, Alexander Pushkin, he was also nobility. But what was really great about that is that he was a person of color. Do you know what I mean? And not only was Gannibal nobility, his great grandfather, not only was he nobility, but he actually became the general in chief of Russian army as a person of color.
So, and that was in the 1700s. So no one had abolished slavery yet. There was, you know, this was still in the height of like post-Enlightenment Europe. They were just getting to grips with things. In a very interesting story. Yeah. I'm glad that you know this too. This is awesome stuff. I love when, you know, people study the history. So in other words, Russia doesn't have a history of being shitty about black people or people of color, but I've heard they're still, because I don't see a lot of black people there, they're still a little bit freaked out by it.
Yeah. So it's like, imagine, This is how I kind of saw it. Like when I was having conversations with people, or when people approached me about conversations with race, because I'm very visibly black, so there was no need for me to go up to people and have these conversations. what I noticed was that, you know, it was more out of like 70% of it was out of intrigue, because, you know, a few of them were like, you know, in school, we were taught this about Africa, and I just wanted to ask a few questions. And some of those questions I could have taken very offensively. I mean, the one person, I can't remember the exact wording, but it was a highly offensive question based on something he'd learned from school, right? And I almost took it very, very personal. I actually had to like take a breather and like walk away. I had a Russian friend with me who was kind of like, no, dude, he wasn't being offensive. This is what we were actually taught at school, right?
Right.
But then you get 30% of people who, I noticed this when I first went to Red Hill, and when you first start venturing into areas in Sandton or whatever, and people see you for the first time, there's that initial "I don't know how to deal with you" factor, which I think if people can guide someone in that period. That is the, you know, in Twilight or these vampire movies, or where there's always that one moment where they could go evil or good. Do you know what I mean? Yes. That is that moment. You know what I mean? So if a country or if a person or if a community or if a friend or if someone catches you at that, "I really don't know how to deal with this" moment, it's the difference between that person changing into a direction that could make them maybe not really sensitive to an issue, or actually just become an absolute complete dick.
So how did you get out of Russia?
So, okay. So when I left the girl that I was with, Anna, she, so it was basically quite a hectic life to walk away from. Cause I mean, she was mm-hmm. very well known in Russia. She was on TV shows and all of that. And historically, wow. I don't know if I could mention it, but it's at this point, I don't know if there's any Russians watching or whatever.
Yeah. Go on. Go on. Tell us. Don't hold back. We want to know.
You know, if not here, we're not. You know, like yes, exactly. Okay, so the girl that I was actually dating, her name was Anna Chapman. Anna Chapman was she was arrested, I think, in 2010 in America, and she pled guilty to being she pled guilty to espionage. So she actually was arrested as a spy in 2010. And wow. by the time we'd met, she'd become like a media personality, all sorts of stuff.
She's a Russian intelligence agent, is what you're telling me.
Yeah. So technically, I don't know how much I can say. Technically speaking, she didn't write that Wikipedia page. That Wikipedia page was written by the FBI. They write that to make sure that everyone knows that she is.
This is a very attractive woman. That let me just show everybody a picture of her. This is a very good-looking woman.
Ooh, holy. With the red hair and all. Okay. Well done to you.
Holy shit. I mean, like, I am... Mamma mia, this is good. Fucking hell. Mumsy, you got to teach me some tricks, man.
Oh.
Wow. And she's Russian... Okay. So she knows, I mean, she could tell you some stories. I would have been very careful to not step on her toes either. She probably knew some dangerous people, right?
I can't confirm nor deny that, but she's very well known. She's very well known. And I mean, it was a very good relationship, but I think we, you know, there was a lot that I was dealing with. It was a very complicated situation. And I also just wanted like a level of, I wanted to experience Russia properly.
Well, you did.
In my own way and kind of like travel and explore.
You experienced Russia. You were embedded. Wow, no, you know, dude. What a story. I mean, I thought we were going to have, because I thought we were going to have a conversation, talk about comedy and like South Africa. Look at this. First of all, Ben dropped some bombshells on us this morning. Now we've got this. I mean, this is just unbelievable.
Yeah, no, it was. Well, I mean, look. Long story short,
How old are you now?
I'm 37.
37. Sure. You look young for 37, but Jesus, you've had experiences. So I'm still curious, like, did the South African government get you out, or did you manage to just get some commercial flight and leave? And also, did you tell her you were leaving, or did you just make a run for it?
No. Russians are very good with communication. In general, Russians are actually very, very amazing people. Like, they're very much like Africans. They battle between the challenge of like a superstition versus modern religions. They battle with their history.
They're very direct people, right? I mean, they don't beat around the bush. There's no like gilding the lily. They don't say, oh, you know, I want to talk to you about something. Let's have a conversation. They're like, I no longer want to be with you. It's over.
Yeah. And I think the reality of the situation is that I didn't actually. I think by the time I'd broken up with her, there were repatriation flights back to South Africa. But I actually built a life. So I'd gotten some clients. I started performing at the open mic comedy shows, and I actually started to get some traction. So in the end, I actually made a decision. It was a very difficult decision to make because I actually have a biological daughter and a adopted daughter, but they're both sisters, same mother. So that was the longest time period that I was actually away from my kids. But
all right, kid Schmids, because we'll get to that. I'm fascinated by the idea that you could do English comedy in Russia, because I've also another stereotype about Russian people. You know, we started talking about stereotypes and the way people speak. one of the stereotypes I've heard about Russians is that they do not have a sense of humor. And I know Russian people. And one of my friends, I call him Alex the Russian. He is, I mean, he's hilarious, but the things he finds funny are dark, and like most people would be disturbed by the shit he finds funny.
Yeah.
And the rest of the time, he's straight faced. I mean, the guy does not, you would think he was the most miserable person in the world, but he's got a great sense of humor. It takes a long time to figure that out with Russians. How did they respond to you?
It was a good response. I mean, look, I'm not gonna say that becoming champion of comedy was based because I was the funniest. I'm pretty funny, but you know, when it came to my use of the English language and how I integrated into their culture, that for them was like a real wow factor. It's like, you know, I didn't just go there and just do material I've been doing in South Africa. I actually learned about Russian culture. I learned about babushkas. I learned how to speak the language. I integrated bits and pieces. I even did I did a comedy set in Russian. I did a 2-minute set in actual Russian. So I think that the appreciation was more that this dude came here and he's trying.
Jesus, you could also speak Russian. I mean, you were immersed in there for like a couple of months, so you'd had to learn something. But you must be very talented at communication in general.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a few tricks that you can use. The set that I actually did, what I did was I pre-recorded myself saying it. And with technology, I had the Bluetooth set in my head. And then I just pasted it. And I had to predict where I thought there would be laughs so that I could hear what I'm saying if they were laughing.
Oh, it's like a...
That's amazing.
Like a science experiment. I'm blown away.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, people find these, I mean, those are the things that really, I can't remember what Nelson Mandela's quote was. And I think everyone just throws them around left, right, and center. But when you do actually make an effort to like learn someone's language or their culture, something inside them connects with you in a very, very, it's always unique. It's not like this, it's a similar type of uniqueness. It's always unique and it's always very special.
This is too much for me to take in for one morning. I'm gonna have to.
Bomb Friday, Gareth.
Yeah, but I mean, you really have some unbelievable stories, and I don't think we've even scratched the surface. I got to get you back in here. We must do this again. We'll organize it, right?
Yeah, 100%. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Like, I'm a huge fan. Superior, you're awesome, guys. This has been lovely.
What a great guy. I mean, like, what an interesting human being to talk to. Mapelo, what a pleasure. Nice to see you, dude.
Thank you.
Mumsy, everybody. Hey, are you doing any shows people can come to?
I'm working on setting up. Okay, so the Santa Comedy Club, which I founded, we have shows. I'm not 100% sure when the next one will be, but if they follow Santa Comedy Club, they can find out. Easiest thing is just to follow Mums Comedy, MUMZ Comedy, and people can find out about my next shows. I just finished doing my I had a show called First World Broke, which I just did 2 shows in Joburg and 3 in Cape Town. I'm hoping to go to Durban soon, but I do want to go back to Joburg again. The material was half baked, and now it's getting a little cool. It's getting to that right temperature. So I want to be back.
All right, so follow him at Mums Comedy, MUMZ Comedy, and he's on all the social media. Good to have you on, man. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Gareth. Thank you so much. Thanks, Simpiwe.
Wow. All right. How's that? How's that, Simpiwe? Busy morning.
Yes, and I'm loving this.
It's great. This is good. Friday's a tour de force today. George Meany, where the hell are you, George? Where are you?
I am at the E-Fest in Cape Town, Gareth. How's it, Gareth?
Looks very good. Are you there at the Silo Hotel? Is that where you are?
I am. Can you see those silos?
I knew
it's gorgeous.
That's magnificent. Beautiful. Have you been to that Zeiss Gallery in there? Magnificent.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. I haven't been in there yet. I'm going to go and have a look.
Nice, George. Look at you hobnobbing with all the people at the E-Pre. So what is an E-Pre, George? Tell us about this.
Yeah, so the E-Pre is the inaugural South African. I mean, E-Grand Prix has been around for a long time, but it's the first time that the race is actually in South Africa in Cape Town. And it's happening around Seapoint Greenpoint Stadium. They're blocking off roads. It's starting to get hectic. We're at the media briefing this morning, which is kind of the launch of the whole thing. Nice. I'm about to address the journalists this morning. And so at the same time, launching our hybrid car survey, which I told you about last week.
Ah, I knew there would be an angle here because Auto Trader, you guys are on top of all these stories. And this is the first time this has ever happened in South Africa, right?
That's correct. And it's actually set to be here for the next 10 years in Cape Town in South Africa. So give me some stats, Gareth. So 2.13 billion rands worth of direct and indirect economic impact is being generated by this event. So 2.13 billion, including 481 million rands worth of global destination exposure. So there's a lot of economic value coming because of this race.
That sounds good. We shouldn't complain about that. We should be encouraging it. So the people of Cape Town obviously excited about it. In fact, my aunt who lives in Cape Town even told me that it was happening. So if she knew, then I guess a lot of people know, because she's not really like a Formula One or a racing car enthusiast. So it must be an exciting atmosphere there. Do you think the whole city's going to get out and watch?
I think most of the city is going to get out and watch. I mean, the number of people that have kind of tried to get tickets, and I actually think the race day tickets are no longer available. I don't think they're full because the race is happening tomorrow. But there's a lot of people that are excited about this. There's activity here from like 5 o'clock this morning. It is unbelievable. I mean, you can see you can see that side. The electric cars are parked behind me. There's a Volvo. So they're sitting up nicely to try and get South Africa to be part of the world's effort for a sustainable future, which leads me into my next story, which is the EU has finally approved across 27 countries the ban of fossil fuel, the manufacture of fossil fuel cars by 2035. It's now legally in the lawmakers' books.
Just by the way, with those cars,
I don't know.
I'm sorry to go away from EU legislation, but it's not my favorite subject for a Friday morning. Any of those cars behind you, because you're an electric car enthusiast, are there any of those that are really sexy that you haven't seen before, or are these all cars that you know and you're familiar with?
All of them I've seen or been in. I think the Volvo's nice, the BMW's nice. For me, the Audi e-tron is probably, you know, one of the nicer ones. And then coupled with that, the BMW, I think you've driven it, Gareth, the iX50 and the iX40, which I think are the most spaced, futuristic style of EVs. But I've been in all the ones that are here so far.
Congo Chris says, I won't be going, Borge. The tickets are a bit pricey, but I'm going next year, no doubt. Is it expensive to go and watch this?
Yeah, it's a couple of thousand rand for a ticket, depending on where you want to sit, if you want cheap seats or the more expensive seats. But it's here for the next 10 years. So, you know, if you feel the urge, plan for next year. Apparently 30-odd% of the bookings that were made for accommodation from external travelers or visitors to South Africa were made 3 months ago already.
Sure, so people are not playing around.
These cars are quiet, right? I mean, then they're not going to be making the noise that a Formula One race would make.
Correct, yeah. So, I mean, you're going to hear other sounds like, the zinging of the engines as they spin up the zinging of the electric motors, or what we'll hear is the tires. I mean, believe it or not, when a car's hurtling down the road or around a corner, the tires are actually making a scratching sound that gets masked by the exhaust noise of regular cars. So you're going to hear those sorts of sounds. So I think it's still going to be noisy, but it's just going to be other noises.
Damn, very cool. Simpiwe, would you go to this?
Yes. I think it was a week ago, I got to experience what it's like being in an electric car. That thing was quiet and it was fast. So I'm definitely like, sign me up. I'm not sure if I want to spend a couple of thousands on a ticket, but sign me up.
Wow. All right.
Well, I think this is brilliant for the South African economy, and you know, like, I'm so glad that it's been committed to for 10 years, because it's going to bring so much to the economy, I think, in terms of external investment, people coming here, actually seeing what Cape Town is like, maybe even investing, buying property. I mean, I think there's a whole lot of benefits down the line.
All right. Well, George, anything else you want to throw in before you take in all the sights and sounds of beautiful Cape Town and make us all jealous with the Silo Hotel in the background? And E-Pre on the way. I mean, Timpiwe and I are basically dying here. We thought we had good lives until this morning.
Well, I mean, Gareth, I'm very fortunate and humbled to be here. So I'm so glad that I do what I do, because, you know, I get to see things like this. I don't want to end on a downer, but the Wyoming, the state of America. I don't know if you know Wyoming, the state of America. I'm pretty sure you're familiar with it. It's one of the smallest states.
It's not one of those places that people put on their list of, oh, you know, you've got to go to Wyoming. It's phenomenal.
Exactly. Now, Wyoming makes up about 0.17% of the U.S. population and is one of the smallest mm-hmm. states. But the one big thing about Wyoming is they're an oil state. So they produce a lot of the oil. They're the eighth largest oil producer in the U.S.
Wow.
They have just passed a law banning the sales of electric cars by 2035.
So they're going opposite to everyone else. Everyone else is trying to make electric cars the rule, and Wyoming's like, nah, we're going to ban these pieces of shit. We need to stay with our internal combustion engines.
Exactly. So whichever side of the fence you decide to sit, electric cars, fossil fuel cars, I mean, cars are cars. And at the end of the day, the long story is that it takes about 8 years for an electric car to become equivalent to a fossil fuel car in terms of environmental impact. So the environmental impact takes about 7 or 8 years before it's equal. But the benefit for me is not only the environmental impact. The benefit for me is that it's just better and simpler technology. That's the reason I drive an electric car. So whichever side of the fence you sit, there's going to be a state or a country that you can go stay in. If you want to still drive fossil fuel cars, go to Wyoming.
Right. Okay. I mean, it's not really on my agenda, but at least we know there's that option. All right, George, good to see you, and thank you for being with us this morning, and enjoy the rest of the E-Pre.
One more thing. All the listeners, I saw this on my social media that Auto Trader is running a competition, like hashtag win any car. So I've entered, and if anybody else wins, can we just talk about the prize? Can we just negotiate the prize? I'm just putting it out there. Okay.
Well, yeah. I mean, our Win Any Car competition we run every single year, and this year is no different. What happens is, you have to take an image of yourself and your current car, and then tell us about your favorite car, then you stand a chance to win a pile of cash towards your next car bought off Auto Trader. So it's been very successful over the last couple of years, and we're running it again this year.
I'm just saying, George, I entered. I entered, okay? So help the sister out.
Simbibi, you know what? People have... Go on.
You can win any car?
Yes, any car on Auto Trader sites. You can win any car. Well, I mean, we give you cash towards the car. So if you choose a Ferrari, we're not going to go and buy you a Ferrari.
Okay. Well, I think it's
I think it's 250,000 rand. If I'm not if I stand to correction.
I'll take it. Thank you. I'm in as well. I'm going to join up. All right. Thank you, George. Thank you, Simpiwe. We will see everybody on Monday morning, bright and early at 6 a.m. Have an awesome weekend. Bye-bye. CliffCentral.com.